Hello, welcome back to this series of videos on the Dhammapada. Today I will continue with verses 3 and 4. But first I'd like to make a correction to the first video about the first verse, wherein I said that the reason the Buddha gave this teaching was because of this monk's killing all these insects unknowingly. And then the monks were saying that he had done a bad deed, and the Buddha said that he indeed didn't. And he explained that suffering only follows from bad intentions. But actually, going over it again, I realized that actually, specifically, the Buddha gave the teaching in regards to the reason why this monk went blind in the first place, which was because in a past life he had, out of revenge for a woman, he was a doctor who had given this treatment to a woman, and out of revenge for her trying to cheat him, he gave her something that would make her blind. And as a result of that bad deed, it came back to him. It was stuck in his mind, because he must have felt very guilty. As a doctor, he was a good doctor, and feeling guilty about it, and you know, it's something that you naturally would feel guilty about. And so it eventually caught up to him, and he realized what a horrible thing he had done, and it conditioned this life for him to have to go blind. So that's the origin. Then after that, the Buddha said, "Oh, you see, you can never escape your bad deeds." But it does go both ways. I mean, obviously, there is reference to the fact that this Chakupala wasn't guilty for the killing that he had done, or for the death of the insects. But he was, on the other hand, guilty for something that he intended to do to hurt this woman. And so he got the results of it. But I'm not going into these stories so much. I just wanted to correct something that I had said. I'm going to try to stick to a very simple version of the stories and place more emphasis on the meaning of the verses and how they apply to our lives, because I think that is of more importance. So, in this next story is the same. It's a very simple story, but it's extended, and I'm going to avoid the extension. So, verses 3 and 4. Number 3 goes, Akochimang awadimang ajinimang ahasime yejatang upanayhanti verang te sang nasammati. And verse 4, almost the same. Akochimang avadhimang achinimang ahasime ye jatang nupanaihanti verang te supasamati. Which means, Akochimang avadhimang achinimang ahasime. This is a quote. He or she or this person scolded me, they hurt me, they beat me, they defeated me, you know, they destroyed me. A person who clings or grasps on or is bound, binds themselves to these thoughts. Vairang te sang na sammati. For them, their quarrels never cease, are never appeased, are never tranquilized, are never finished. But akochimang avadimang achinimang ahasime, he hurt me, you know, he scolded me, he beat me, he hurt me, he defeated me. For a person who doesn't cling to these thoughts, vairang te supasammati, their quarrels are appeased, and their quarrels are tranquilized, they're finished. You know? The problems they have with people are solved, are worked out. These two verses were given in regards to a monk named Fat Tissa. Tissa, who was very fat. He was quite overweight, he had quite a lot of weight, and he became a monk late in life, and rather than practicing meditation, he took to a very indulgent monk's life. He was a relative of the Buddha, so he was quite spoiled in being a part of the royalty. And also because of his conceit, because he was related to the Buddha, he didn't bother to exert himself in the practice of meditation. He just would sit around and make a general nuisance of himself, which in fact you do find in monasteries even today, believe it or not. And so there was one occasion where he was sitting in the reception sala, I guess, in the middle of the monastery. Maybe it wasn't a sala, but in the very middle where you would expect visitors to come. And so these visiting monks came, who were actually quite senior, but were younger than him, because he had ordained when he was old. And they thought, well, maybe he's an old monk, so they, senior monk, so they came and came up to him. They saw that he was just sitting there looking proud, and so they came and paid respect to him and asked politely who he was and so on, and how many years he had been a monk. And he told them, years. He said, years, I've just ordained, I don't have any years as a monk. And they said, well, then how can you act like this? How can you just sit there? When visiting monks come, it's very important, there's a protocol. If the receiving monk, someone who sees a monk coming, is junior to the approaching monk, then they have a responsibility to take care of them, to take their bowl, to bring them water, to show them to a room and so on, and to make sure that they're well taken care of, and to pay respect to them. And so they said, how come you're not following this protocol? You're not behaving like a proper monk. And they said, that's not appropriate. And he said, huh, who are you? Who do you think you are? He said, he snapped his fingers, this kind of a rude gesture of the times in India. And they said, oh, well, we've come to see the Buddha. And he said, huh, and you think you can say nasty things? He was very, very upset, actually. He was very spoiled. And so he said, who do you think you are? You know who I am. I'm the relative of the Buddha. I'm his cousin. Something like that. And he was very upset. And so he went to see the Buddha and he started complaining. He started crying to the Buddha. And he said, these men have scolded me and they've abused me. And the Buddha said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I was just sitting there. And did you receive them when they came? No. Did you take their bowls? No. Did you show them? And so on and so on. No. And the Buddha said, well, then you yourself are to blame. You're the one who was acting inappropriately. And the Buddha said, you should apologize to them. And he said, apologize? What do you mean? They abused me. I will not apologize. So he's very obstinate. So the Buddha told a story of the past life of this monk. The monks remarked how obstinate he was. The Buddha said, oh, he's been like this for a long time. It's kind of a habit of his, an extended habit. And so he told a story of the past life and where there were these two ascetics in a room together, and one of them was sleeping in front of the door and one of them was sleeping inside, because it was a small room. And the one inside noticed that this monk had put his head down here. But in the middle of the night, this monk got up and put his head the other way, turned around to sleep the other way. And the monk inside had to go outside to the washroom, and he went around where he thought the monk's feet were and ended up stepping on his hair. And so the monk was very angry, and the other monk said, oh, I'm sorry, or the other ascetic said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And he went outside, and on the way, when he was out, the monk said, I'm not going to let him do that again. And so he flipped over and put his head the other way again, back to where it originally was. And the other monk came back and thought to himself, okay, I'll avoid stepping on his head. So he ran around to the other side and ended up stepping on the guy's neck. There was a big fight that ensued. And he said, well, look, you had your head there. What are you doing changing all the time? How can I know where your head is? It's dark. I don't have a clue. I don't have flashlights. But the monk wasn't to be, the ascetic wasn't to be appeased, and he was very angry, and he held on to this, and he made a big fuss over it, and he actually cursed the other ascetic. And then they're cursing back and forth and so on. It's a long story. I don't want to get into it. But the point being that people do hold on to these things. And this is important because this is what the Buddha emphasized. He didn't say, don't have these thoughts. He doesn't say, for a person who has these thoughts, because These thoughts are wrong. It's wrong for us to think like this. Why is it wrong? It's unpleasant. It creates suffering for us, and it builds up a bad habit. But what the Buddha is saying here is actually a little more specific. He's saying don't cling to them. He says for a person who is bound to them, the word is like the same as word we use for, that you use in Pali for a sandal, when you bind together a sandal, the bound, the rope of the sandal or so on. So when you're bound, when you're tied to these things, when you're caught up in these thoughts, when you cling to them, basically, this is what, where your problems never cease. Because the point here that I think is important is that we do have problems. We do have disagreements. I mean, I've gotten angry at people. We get angry at people. We have, people do things we don't like, and we get angry at them. We get upset at each other. A good example is with our families. When our parents tell us to do something or our parents criticize us, we can become very angry, even to the point where we yell at them and where we say nasty things and really hurt our parents, can cause greater hurt for them or suffering for them. And we suffer ourselves and so on. But what we won't do is cling, generally speaking, in an ordinary family situation, we won't cling to it. So the next day or the next moment, we'll forget about it because we don't have this clinging to them. But we aren't this way in all cases. And there is the case where, as with this monk Tissa, he clung to it. And he couldn't get over his own anger, his own upset at being criticized. It's very difficult to be criticized. It's very difficult for young monks, new monks, to be criticized. Because they can be very proud of the fact that now they're in a special state. And now they have some kind of special lifestyle. And people respect them and look up to them and give them free food and shelter and so on. And so they can be very proud of that instead of putting it to good use and really making themselves into something worthy of it. And so this is where the problem arises, with the conceit and with the clinging to it, where you become self-righteous and you say, I don't deserve that, and so on. You don't even, there's not even the rational thought there where you think, are they right? Are they wrong? And if they're wrong, then you can say, well, I don't deserve that. And you can reply to them. For instance, this Tissa, he had this complaint to the Buddha. And he said to the Buddha, these monks have done something nasty. Well, the Buddha did respond. It's not that the Buddha just said, oh, yes, yes. Letting him walk all over, the Buddha walk all over these monks, letting him get away with it. The Buddha was quite clear that he was wrong. And we can do that. If someone criticizes us and says we did something wrong, we can say, no, I didn't do anything wrong, based on our rational thought. But we don't do this generally. Generally, we say, we don't think about, we just, out of anger, we refuse any criticism and become upset and we become self-righteous. And it festers in the mind. This is what gives rise to grudges and enmity and feuds, war. When we build hate in our mind, and it's a self-righteous, egotistical hate, this is how religious wars are fought. It's not because we're angry at each other. If you look at ideological wars in the world, where this country comes to hate that country, and our whole mindset is that this country is evil, this country is bad. Many people feel this way about America, and so they've cultivated this evil, and that's what happened. All this terrorism that's been a fear of the American people. I mean, to some extent, it's justified because there's a lot of people out there who don't like, who just have this anger towards this country as a whole. Now, as an example, and you have this throughout the world. You have our prejudices against people and so on. But we build this up. We build this up quite often, and this is what we have to be careful about, because we will have fights, we will have disagreements, and we will get angry at each other until we get to the point where we are able to see that anger is unpleasant and unuseful and able to get rid of it entirely. But what is dangerous and what is a hindrance to our path towards giving up the anger is this attachment, this clinging to it. It covers up the whole nature of the anger. It prevents you from actually looking at the anger for what it is. When you're angry and then you say, this is right that I'm angry, these people deserve my wrath and so on, then you're justifying it and you're covering it up. It's like you have suppose you have this ball of hot iron, or you have this hot coal, and you're holding it in your hand, and you say this and this is, and it's hurting you, and so you grab it and you say, what is it that's hurting me? What is it that's hurting me? And you say, you know, you're looking for the cause outside of yourself, when actually it's right here. When you have this person who's causing you to get angry, and then you say, you're the cause, you're the reason why I'm suffering. And you're not looking at what you're holding here, you're holding the anger. You're holding on to these thoughts. It's actually these thoughts that's making us suffer. We have to be very careful, because the anger itself is not so dangerous. It's unpleasant, but it's not the real problem. The danger in the anger is with the ego that comes along with it. That if we have ego and we attach our ego to the anger, and it becomes self-righteous, and we every time we think of a person, we are upset by them, we're angry, we have hate towards people, or we have a grudge towards people, we're biased against people, and so on. This is what, every time we see them, everything they do will be something we can criticize. We'll always be looking for, they did that wrong, and so on. And when they do things good, we'll feel upset. You know, when good things happen to them, we'll be upset. When they act in a good way, we'll try to minimize it, and so on. And we'll create great suffering for ourselves. This is a very important lesson. And it's in general a very important lesson with the defilements of the mind, that they're really not that bad. You know, greed, anger, let's say greed and anger, they're not that big of a deal. You know, you can watch them and you can look at them, but the problem is we don't. The problem is we never learn about these things. You know, people think pleasure is such a great thing, you know, attaching to things is so great when you have sensual pleasure and sexual pleasure and so on. We think it's so great because we cling to it, because there's the idea that I like this, I want this, and so on. But if we actually just looked at the pleasure when it came up, instead of saying, okay, I have to get this, if we just looked at the wanting of it, if we just examined it for what it is, we see that actually it's quite a bit of stress, actually. It's this tension. And the only way you can relieve that tension is either by seeing it and letting it go, or by chasing after and getting what you want, and then saying, ah, now I don't need it anymore. So the happiness doesn't come from the wanting, it comes from getting from giving up the wanting, either in one of two ways. The problem, of course, with following it is that you're encouraging it, and you're developing it more and more. You're clinging more and more. And there's no understanding of the problem with it. Now the same goes with anger. When you're angry at someone, it's suffering, yes, but it's actually not such a big deal until you do what Tissa does, and you come to identify with the anger and identify a source of the anger in another person, that they are the cause of the problem, that the problem is not the anger, the problem is the other person. So the real problem is our delusion and our ignorance. This is why the Buddha said, avijja paccaya sankhara, all sankharas, all formations in the mind, all judgments. So your sankhara here means our judgments, our partialities, our projections that we place on things. These are all caused by ignorance. It's ignorance that is the root. And so that's really what this verse is talking about. It's the delusion. It's the identification with these thoughts that is the problem. And our defilements are in different levels. There is the misperception of something as pleasant or unpleasant, which comes to us all, and, you know, until you get to fully enlightened, you know, you still will have this perception of something as being pleasant or unpleasant. So something comes, oh, that's nice, or something comes and that's not nice. This is just a feeling that you get. You know, if something is, oh, if this is experienced as pleasant, this is experienced as unpleasant. The next level is our thoughts, and this is what he's talking about here, is this thought, oh, this is thinking, no, that's unpleasant, thinking this is pleasant. So person says something to you and think, oh, he's hurting me, or oh, he's abusing me. You know, this person's saying nasty things, you think, oh, that person's saying nasty things. This is at the thought level. But the worst one is the views. When you have a view about it, and that is good, this is bad, and pleasure is good, pleasure, and pain is bad, and so on. And so this is when you identify, when you build up this I and you us and them, you know, me and you, you hurt me, and so on. When we build this up, this is what really, really causes problems. Because, as I said, it obscures the nature of the experience. The only way we can come to be free is if we are able to see the nature of the anger, the nature of the greed, and be able to work out for ourselves what is truly right for us. The only way we can work out what is truly right is by seeing the individual experience. And we can't do this if we're clinging. We can't do this if we are, if we have some idea or identification with the object as me and mine and so on. Okay, so I think I've gone over that enough. This is a fairly important teaching. It helps us to, I think this will help us in our practice, because it also helps us to accept and to allow to come up the bad things in our mind. You know, greed and anger are bad, but the only way we're going to come to see that they're really and truly bad is if we let them come up. We can't just say it's bad, it's good. Until we have wisdom and are able to see clearly, what is it? Is it good? Is it bad? Not from here, thinking or so on, and not because I say or because a book says, but simply by seeing it for yourself. So you don't have this view that, well, I think anger is good, well, I think greed is good, and then, or you don't have the idea that, oh, Yuta Dhammo said it's bad, Yuta Dhammo said it's good, and so on. You know for yourself. And only when you know for yourself are you going to be able to see it. You're going to be able to let go of it and overcome it. And you will never be able to do this, again, as I've said again and again now, never be able to do this if you're clinging to it, if you're holding on to it. And therefore, vairang te sang na samati, the quarrels, the problems that person encounters will never cease. So thanks for tuning in. This has been another verse. All the best.